Live from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank, the bank that specializes in understanding you. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And hello again, everyone. Welcome to another edition of North Fulton Business Radio. I'm John Ray, and we are headed back, folks, to our studio inside Renaissance Bank in Alpharetta. We've been out because of pandemic-related restrictions, but we're going to be back in our studio here mid-April. We're excited about that. What has not changed throughout all this pandemic and concerns of the business turmoil is the steadiness of Renaissance Bank. If you are a small business owner and you're tired of the big bank experience you might be having, and you know what I mean, computer-generated voices and phone trees and 1-800 numbers and the inability to get a live person on the phone, my suggestion is calling Renaissance. Go to renaissancebank.com and find their local office. They've got some 200 across the South ready to serve you, and give them a call. You'll get a person there in that office who will be happy to make an appointment with you and sit down and chat, talk about your business, and see if there's a fit there. And I think you'll be glad you did. I have found that for myself, and I don't talk about anybody on this show whose services I haven't experienced myself. So check them out, Renaissance Bank at renaissancebank.com. Understanding you, member FDIC. And now I want to welcome Dr. Simone Phipps. And Dr. Phipps is the Associate Professor of Management at Middle Georgia State University. Dr. Phipps, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation.
It's great to have you here. Let's talk a little bit about you and your background and your professional interests. Tell us a little bit about your journey.
Okay, well, I was born and raised in Trinidad and Tobago in the Caribbean, and I was afforded the opportunity to come to the U.S. to study thanks to a full scholarship from the historic Claflin University, which is an HBCU in Orangeburg, South Carolina. I graduated from there with a bachelor's in management information science, but I realized really quickly that the information science part wasn't for me, but I love the management part. And so I stuck with management. I did my MBA at Ohio University and then my PhD in human resource and leadership development at Louisiana State University. And after graduating from LSU, I started working as a management professor at Middle Georgia State University, where I am today still. So I teach a number of management courses like principles of management, organizational behavior, entrepreneurship, human resource management, strategic management, leadership. And in terms of research, because as a professor, you know, I don't only teach, I do research and I'm expected to engage in service as well. And so in terms of research interests, I am really fascinated with management history, especially as it relates to entrepreneurship, leadership, social innovation, social sustainability, etc. So really and truly, you can say I'm really interested in relationships between the organization and society. So my research usually involves exploring minorities, whether it be gender minorities or racial or ethnic minorities. And my aim is to highlight their struggles and contributions, and also to find possible solutions to improve the minority experience in both business and society. So that's what I do.
Wow. I'm exhausted listening to all that. Dr. Phipps, wow, that's a lot there. But let's unpack, this here. So you, I guess let's go ahead and give a shout out to your book, because you co-authored a book with Dr. Leon Prieto, who we've had on the show b- before, who also happens to be your husband. So,
yes.
Yeah. So you released a book called African American Management History, and that's where both race and gender intersect for you in your part of this book, right?
That's correct. Yes. So we looked at a number of African American figures that in the business world, they were real visionaries and business pioneers, but they were overlooked, you know, and so they're excluded both from textbooks and even mainstream media. And so my co-author and I found that, you know, it was strange, you know, when we were in university studying management, you know, why are all the figures that we read about, they're mostly male, they're mostly white. We know that it's impossible that Black people did not contribute to management. And so that's how we started really trying to explore and see what the contributions of African Americans were. And so we did some research into African traditions and philosophies, and we realized that cooperation was a big part of that. And so that's why where the idea of cooperative advantage comes in the book, that idea of working together and embracing the tenets of an African tradition that's known as Ubuntu, which is I am because we are. And those tenets are spirituality, dialogue, and consensus building. And so we look at how these figures from African American history were able to benefit from using those tenets.
And this is for those that have not heard this or have not read the book, did not hear our previous interview with Dr. Prieto, this is a lot more than just, well, to use just one word, networking. I mean, this is more than having a network. I mean, there's something deeper here in the concepts that you're talking about. Why don't you explain that, please?
Definitely. So, as I mentioned, we realized that historically, cooperation was always a really big part of African tradition. So Ubuntu, as I mentioned, that prominent African tradition that meant can be translated to mean I am because we are. We realize that those tenets of Ubuntu were really instrumental in success. And so we define cooperative advantage as the benefits that an organization possesses and accrues due to its people-centric or people-oriented approach to engendering those tenets of spirituality, dialogue, and consensus building for the benefit of all stakeholders, so employees, customers, and community. And so just to give a little bit of insight on the tenets, when people think about spirituality, a lot of times they think about religion or religious ideals. But spirituality is really about focusing on people's well-being, you know, caring about people, making sure that you try to understand what their needs are, being attentive to those needs, being responsive to those needs, accepting responsibility to help where you can, about caring about building community, etc. So, you know, if organizations actually show that they cared, then people would be better off. Also, dialogue has to do with conversational sensibility. So organizations need to engage in discussion, make sure people are included, make sure they understand that they have a voice, etc. And consensus building, that idea of trying to reach agreement with your stakeholders. So that builds on dialogue. You can't really reach an agreement until discussions have been fully explored. You've listened to all parties. Then you can really work together. And so cooperative advantage ends up being of mutual benefit, really. The organization is going to be beneficial to the stakeholders. And in return, the stakeholders are going to support the organization. So there's reciprocity there.
These ideas are awfully counterintuitive in the world a lot of us have grown up in, mm-hmm. which is kind of what I share, I have to give up. I don't benefit. you know, right, that it's a dog eat dog world, however you want to term it. You know, that there's a limited piece of the pie, and so I have to grab as much as my pie as possible. So how do you teach these concepts to your students who really haven't grown up with these ideas?
It's really important to try to reimagine what life could be like, because you've been growing up with these ideas of it's important to compete, and not just students, even non-students, because if you are out there in the world of work, etc., you always hear about how important it is to compete and to be the best. And there's this idea that it's okay as long as you make it if someone else doesn't, or if even you are the cause of someone else not making it. And so it's important to share how it's actually going to be more beneficial for everyone if you care about everyone. Because when you just care about yourself and others fall by the wayside, eventually that's going to catch up to you too. You know, so even if you think about countries, you know, when some countries are ahead and others fall behind, then the ills that affect those countries are going to affect your country too, because we live in a global society. And so the same thing with organizations, because organizations don't exist in a vacuum, you know, they influence society and society influences organizations. And so when organizations get ahead at the expense of other organizations, eventually it's going to impact those people who get ahead as well.
Great words here, folks, from Dr. Simone Phipps. Dr. Phipps is the Associate Professor of Management at Middle Georgia State University, and she is also the co-author of a book called African American Management History. Dr. Phipps, I want to get into the intersection of gender and race, and let's talk about the women in your research that you have really amplified their accomplishments and their contributions to management history.
Okay, well, when it comes to leadership in general, you know, it's a really important topic, which is why there's so many theories of leadership and, you know, all this debate and discussion of what makes an effective leader, etc. And so it's important to talk about gender and that intersection of gender and race, because, you know, there's a gap, generally speaking, in leadership. It's dominated by men. So there's a gender gap, and there's an even bigger race gender gap. So we always hear about the glass ceiling that women have to break and rise to the top. But for Black women especially, some people even call it a concrete ceiling or a concrete wall, because it's so much more difficult. So you have to really think about, you know, ask yourselves why. Why is there this gap? What are the main factors that cause this disparity? And of course, how you can address it. And these figures from history really give you some insight into how you can try and survive as a minority person using that same cooperative advantage idea. So some of the women from history, the first one, there are a number of them, but I'm going to focus on two. The first one is Annie Turnbull Malone. And I mention her because a lot of people have heard about Madam C.J. Walker and her success in the beauty and hair care industry. But few people know about Annie Turnbull Malone. So she had success even before Madam C.J. Walker. And she actually gave Madam C.J. Walker her start as a sales agent. So Annie Turnbull Malone founded a beauty, hair care, and cosmetic business. And she built her business under the Poro brand. And she was really a pioneer of direct selling in beauty, the beauty industry. And she developed an efficient franchising system way back then. She recruited women and she trained them as sales agents. And what's really fascinating is that she had both a national and international presence. Her brand was, and her sales agents were present in urban cities like Miami and Los Angeles, Washington, Detroit, Chicago, Baltimore, New York, and others. And even in countries like Canada, the Philippines, countries in the Caribbean, countries in Africa, in South America. So that's really incredible that she was able to have that global presence despite all the challenges, and really create a lot of jobs. She created almost 75,000 jobs back then.
Wow.
For women, especially Black women, who back then were really relegated to jobs like washerwomen and domestics, etc. So she gave them that opportunity to have employment where they can use skills other than the roles that they were relegated to, which was really fascinating to us. And the other woman was Magdalena Walker. And she was actually the first Black woman in the U.S., to own a bank, charter and own a bank. She was also president of the bank. It was called the St. Luke Penny Savings Bank. And the bank was not just a business to have profit. It was really a social enterprise. And it facilitated the economic and social development of the Black community, including women, especially women, because she had this... She had a special place in her heart for women and for Black women. And so the bank was able to help not only increase savings and help create businesses, but it increased home ownership, which was a big deal, and also jobs for Black women again. And also she initiated a department store, established a department store called the Emporium. So there, the Black community could get not just quality goods at an affordable price, but again, Black women were able to get jobs, which helped with that economic and social development as well right there. So in one of her speeches, she was really articulate, gave a number of speeches. She talked about women's fear and how women shouldn't be relegated to a role like a domestic or think that they have to be in the kitchen all the time, just like men shouldn't be decided that, you know, they had to be a mechanic, etc. That it shouldn't be decided for them. They should decide for themselves what they wanted to do. So these two women and others really showed how they can make a difference, even though women were relegated to roles and there was that gap back in that era, you know, where there was so much segregation, et cetera.
Oh, absolutely. And let's get back for just a second to Annie Turnbull Malone, because folks need to understand the timing here. This was well before a lot of the other sales agents organizations that people are familiar with, Mary Kay or whatever, right? So this is well before that. In terms of timing, that this operating model she developed.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So this was in what is termed the golden age of Black business, which is a time frame between 1900 and 1930.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So it's a part in history where Black businesses really, really succeeded and they thrived despite the challenges that they faced, you know, in terms of segregation and the racism of that era, et cetera.
Sure, sure. And so you've got another figure in your book that I was personally struck by, Magdalena Walker. Mm-hmm. And in the book, you call her an embodiment of transformational leadership.
That's right.
Yeah, explain that.
So transformational leadership is one of those theories in management when you talk about leadership, leadership theories. And a lot of people argue that that is like the standard that you should strive to achieve in terms of leadership. You should try to be a transformational leader. And really and truly, transformational leaders they really make a difference. You know, they're able to engage their followers in such a way that it's not just about self-interest, but it's a way to really transform themselves and the organization for the better. So transformational leadership actually has four dimensions. There is idealized influence, which is that idea of being the leader, being a role model and setting the example and having that vision that inspires people. There is inspirational motivation, the leader able to inspire and motivate people so that they have a passion for what they are doing. There is the dimension of intellectual stimulation, where the leader doesn't just expect the follower to just follow the status quo, but encourages them to think outside the box, to voice their opinions, to share their ideas, to be creative, you know, and doesn't punish them for experimentation, etc. And finally, there is the dimension of individualized consideration, which is just the leader really caring about the follower, whether it's the employee or, you know, as other stakeholder, and caring about their needs, their preferences, and trying to meet those needs. So a transformational leader is someone who's not just thinking about themselves and trying to, you know, climb the ladder and be successful for themselves, but they're trying to make a difference for the organization, for the people around.
Sure. And I jumped ahead a bit with my question, because I want to make sure we celebrate this terrific individual, Maggie Lena Walker. Explain for those that have not heard of her, explain her and a little bit of her history.
Well, yes, it's a fascinating history as well, because she was born in Richmond, Virginia, and she was very poor. You know, she grew up really, really poor. And her stepdad was actually killed when she was young. And so that made things even more challenging. And her mom, of course, she had to pretty much help him to take care of the family. But she really cared about education and about progress from a very young age. And so she made sure that she focused on education. And when she was young, she started teaching, you know, she taught at Sunday school, and she became really involved in this organization called St. Luke, which was like a mutual aid society for people of the Black community back then. And she stayed, I want to say, maybe from when she was maybe about 14 years old. And she continued with that organization throughout. She actually became a teacher when she was a little older, maybe around 19 or 20 or so. And but she had to leave teaching when she got married, as was the law back then. But she didn't want to just be at home doing nothing, even though she was married. And so she really got more involved in St. Luke organization when she had to leave teaching. And that's, I guess you can say, that support system of St. Luke supported her, even though she was a woman. And that also helped to inspire her and to give her that support that she could be successful at all these different initiatives that she started with the support of St. Luke.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Folks, we're here chatting with Dr. Simone Phipps. Dr. Phipps is Associate Professor of Management with Middle Georgia State University, also a co-author of the book African American Management History. So I guess let's widen out the lens again and talk specifically about gender. Because the contribution of women is so important, and I'm fascinated by these women who really had two big hills to climb. I mean, the hill of race, the hill of gender. And talk about what it was about these women that the common theme that you see in them that makes them so in made them successful and makes them inspiring today?
Well, the common theme, obviously, they had a whole lot of grit, you know, and that determination, that drive, that they weren't going to be held back. Of course, they had a lot of ambition. And so those individual factors are always going to be important. But I think what helped also is that they had that support system. And so back then, they were able to do it because, and I have to come back to that idea of cooperative advantage, they were able to work together in unity with the Black community that supported them. So they cared about the Black community, and in return, the Black community cared about them and supported them. And so I think that is the key to why they were successful, despite all the challenges that they faced, you know. And from the beginning, it wasn't just about them. Yes, they wanted to be able to have a better life, but they also wanted their people, their community, to have a better life. And so they did care about the well-being of their community and tried to assist.
So this may seem like an obvious question with an obvious answer, but I've learned over time it's important to address these kind of questions head on. And that is why it's so important to highlight these women and their contributions to those of us today, and particularly business students that you teach. Why is it so important to highlight their stories?
It's really important because knowledge is key and information. And when it comes to education, it's really support. I see education as part of it being enlightenment, you know. And so if students are not getting this aspect of business, because they have to learn something about management history. So if this aspect of management history is left out or overlooked, then they're not getting a complete education. They're not getting all the perspectives out there that they can learn from, because, you know, there are nuggets of wisdom, you know, that they can get from these women and the Black men as well, of course, but of these women who face these challenges that they can still use today, because management history helps to inform what's going on in the present and helps you to be able to shape the future as well. If you learn from what's going on, you can, you know, try to avoid the problems of the past and use the useful things as you try to make a difference in the future. And so for education, you get a more complete education if they are included in the curriculum. And also it helps with a better understanding and it's not just Black students, all students, it will help with that. For the Black students, they will be able to have that imagery in terms of role models, and they'll be able to relate to these examples who experience the same challenges they may be experiencing today. But even other students, they get that more complete education. They get a greater understanding of different contexts. And hopefully with that greater understanding will come more compassion, because when they graduate from school, they're going out in the real world and they're going to be working in organizations, and you don't want them to perpetuate the same problems in the past. So you want them to understand other people's challenges and contexts and try to make a difference when they get out in the world as well, the world of work.
Yeah, for sure. So Dr. Phipps, talk about maybe some of what the projects that you have that are you're in the middle of, that are coming up, kind of where you take your work from here.
Okay, well, my co-author and I recently talked about we have an article about the purpose of the firm and that idea of not just thinking about unbridled capitalism, but really trying to to think about well-being. So it ties back. We're really big on trying to push this idea of cooperative advantage and not just the alternative. So the real purpose of the firm, you know, we want to question that. Is it really to maximize profits and the wealth of shareholders and to maximize efficiency? Or is it really to care about people's well-being so everyone can have a better life and have a chance? And also we talk about reconfiguring the board of organizations to make a difference with people. Because a lot of times people talk about diversity on the board, which is important, but just because you have a diverse board doesn't necessarily mean that there'll be change. You need people who are actually passionate about diversity and inclusion on the board. And so in the future, we also want to keep uncovering these figures that would have been overlooked and find out more about them and about their contributions. And we're also looking at, we're thinking about writing another book as well, but focusing on cooperative advantage and social sustainability, you know, how we can tackle those major problems. And again, at that intersection of organization and society, how organizations can work towards bettering society while they still make a profit. Yes, but it doesn't have to be at the expense of others.
Well, I suspect, and I'm the layperson here, you're the expert, but I suspect if as we learn more and continue to learn more, that what we will find is that firms are better off, are more profitable by taking this approach, that they hurt themselves by putting up barriers to cooperative advantage by acting in ways that are exclusionary. Am I on the right track there, or what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you can have debate on that, right? Because some people would say, well, if firms really were totally better off financially in terms of profits, then that's the route they would take, right? So obviously there would be some, I don't want to say disadvantages, but obviously they will have to make some sacrifices sometimes if they're thinking about well-being and not just profit. For example, the fact that we're in a pandemic, if businesses really cared about the well-being of employees, just an example off the top of my head, their first choice would not be to let go of employees so that they can keep money. You know, they might try to find other ways, like, okay, can we have furloughs where those who make even more money can maybe give up some of theirs so that those who are the bottom level and making little can at least keep their jobs. Mm. And that way everybody ends up sacrificing, you know, but it's for the better good. So that idea of utilitarianism, you know, for the better good of everyone instead of just a few. But if businesses just think about maximizing profit, then, you know, it's a really selfish way that the ones that are going to be the most wealthy are going to continue being the ones that are most wealthy while everyone else ends up suffering.
Mm.
One specific example that I can think of, and it's something that's really dear to my heart, would be the chocolate industry, which is it's like a multi-billion dollar industry, you know? And so the executives in these big companies, they make a lot of money. But if you think of the supply chain and where they get the cocoa from to make the chocolate, those poor farmers in the Philippines or Ecuador, Ivory Coast or Ghana, they barely make a living. They can't even make a living wage. They're very poor. And then you end up with these other problems because of that, like child labor and slave labor to work on those cocoa plantations, because the owners of the plantations themselves can't actually make enough money. And so if these big corporations were to think about things like that, then they would want to offer a fairer wage for cocoa, even though it may come at the expense of they'll still make their profits, but it may not be as much profits as they are now.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. What you're saying makes perfect sense to me. And I'm sorry about that bunny trail, but I had to ask you about that. And I could go on. But this has been great, Dr. Phipps. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. And I want to get to one of the really important questions, which is for those that have heard something that makes them want to get in touch, can hear more about your book, maybe interested in buying it and reading it, which I strongly encourage. It's a great book. Tell them how they can be in touch with you.
Okay. Well, I am on LinkedIn, so you can just go to LinkedIn and type in my name, Simone Phipps, S-I-M-O-N-E, last name P-H-I-P-P-S. And I'm also on Twitter. My handle is at Dr. Simone Phipps. So that's at D-R-S-I-M-O-N-E-P-H-I-P-P-S.
Dr. Simone Phipps at Middle Georgia State University. Dr. Phipps, it's been a pleasure.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you. Very glad to be here.
Yeah, thank you so much. Folks, just a quick reminder, if you've got administrative tasks in your business that are holding you back, that you're working on them instead of working on the business, growing the business, if you're working on bookkeeping instead of working on making sales for the business, then as a business owner, you may need to shift your priorities. And I've got a way to help you do that. And that involves picking up the phone and calling Essie Escobedo over at Office Angels, 770-442-9246. Now, Essie and her team have been around for over 20 years, about 21 years, and she has a whole team of angels. And she listens to what your problem is and then picks an angel or two to fly in and get that work done and fly out. And they do it on an ongoing or as-needed basis. So if you are tied up in knots on tasks in your business that you need to get rid of, my suggestion is getting in touch with Essie. Give her a call. Or if you're shy, you can check out the website officeangels.us. But my suggestion is just give her a call. Tell her I sent you. And again, I use her services. I know of her and her work and have done that for many years. I couldn't run my business without her. So I strongly suggest that if you've got some of those issues, that you get in touch. And folks, just as we close the show here, please connect with us on your favorite podcast app. The search term is North Fulton Business Radio on Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, whatever your favorite place to consume podcasts are. You can find us on any of those platforms. We would love it if you would give us a 5-star review. No, it's not about me. No, it's not about Business Radio X. Yes, it is about our guest. We want people to find the show, to find our great guest like Dr. Phipps and the other 600-plus guests we've had over almost 350 shows now. So we love it when we see them get connected with folks that can benefit from their work, their services, what have you. You can also connect with us on social media, North Fulton BRX, on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. So for my guest, Dr. Simone Phipps, I'm John Ray. Join us next time here on North Fulton Business Radio.